Hello, everyone. This is Lauren Fogelman from Mindset for Winning Athletes, and I want to welcome you to today's show. And today's topic is cycling, wine, and men, a midlife tour de France, with my special guest, Nancy Brook. Before we get started, do you have what it takes to be a winning athlete but realize something might be lacking during your competitions, possibly losing focus and confidence in the moments before your event begins, or thinking about previous times when you didn't perform your best, or concerns about the competition? Whatever it is, you know it's distracting you at the event, affecting your focus. You might try to tough it out, but the results just don't last. Clearing the distractions affecting your focus and confidence is easier than you think. Together, we can implement a strategy for winning results. Contact me for a free discovery session at info@innergameforwinningathletes.com. You are in the right place if you're interested in everything you need to know about how to push yourself beyond your limits, both physically and psychologically. I suggest you have a pen and paper ready, because Nancy is going to share a lot, and we're going to let you know where you'll be able to find more information during the call. Nancy Brook is a motivational speaker and author, and you can find out more about her book and her services at nancybrook, it's BROOK.com. Once again, nancybrook.com. And Nancy Brook is a writer, speaker, and world traveler who lives in Montana, which is Big Sky Country. She's also the author of the newly released book, Cycling, Wine, and Men, A Midlife Tour de France. On its first day of release, the book climbed to the bestseller status in its category on Amazon.com. Today, Nancy is going to talk about her journey across France by bicycle, how she prepared for the tour, and some of the epic climbs she encountered. In addition to being a writer, Nancy is also an award-winning motivational speaker, businesswoman, and, of course, cycling chick. Nancy's goal with writing and speaking is to inspire people to heed the call of their passions. Many of us feel so obligated by responsibilities that we've forgotten what gives us delight. And she firmly believes by finding her path and our path and exploring our world, we can create a life that nurtures the soul. Now, I'd like to officially and properly introduce today's special guest, Nancy. I want to welcome you to the call today.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren. It's great to be here.
You are welcome. And I know that we've talked a little bit, but what I would really like to hear a little bit more about is how you got to be a cycling chick. What led you there?
Well, I'll tell you what, like a lot of people, I had a daughter at home. I had a child at home. And my activities tend to be centered around her activities. She played softball and lots of different sports. And so when she went away to college, actually, to pursue a college softball scholarship, I found myself alone with more time on my hands than I was used to. And so what I decided to do was to pursue something that I had enjoyed in my younger years, and that was cycling. So I started just by buying a bike and tootling around my neighborhood, and that led to more riding, more improvement, and eventually international travel.
That's really amazing. And so I know that you started pretty much late in life then, if you had your daughter out of the house already. Did you find that when you were beginning this endeavor that you felt like you had to catch up to the rest of the pack?
Oh, you would have no idea. I live in Billings, Montana, and there tend to be, maybe it's just in Billings, but there tend to be a lot more male cyclists than female cyclists. And so when I first started going with a cycling group, I was with a pack of men.
Hmm.
And I will tell you, it was a challenge to try to stick on to the pack, even for a few miles, and I'd inevitably get dropped. And this happened week after week, and pretty much until the end of the summer. But it was my perseverance to try to hang with them and to try to at least be able to ride the distance that made me a better cyclist.
That's pretty amazing, because I know that a lot of women would be intimidated just even going to ride with a group of men, even if they've had the experience, let alone as a newbie?
Well, and I have to say the men that I ride with are very generous, and of course they're going their own speed, and it's nothing personal that they drop me, and if I got dropped, they'd come back and get me or wait for me until I caught up. But they were always real friendly and never made me feel like an idiot because I couldn't ride their speed when I first started.
And one of the things that I know you did as far as your training was wind training, and I've heard of spin class, and I've taken a spin class before, but I've never heard about wind training, and would really like to hear more about that and what separates that from spinning and how it really helped you.
Well, I will tell you, like I mentioned, I first started just riding my bike in my neighborhood, and I was having a great time. And then winter came in Montana, and of course, I couldn't ride my road bike outside. There was ice and snow on the streets. So I heard about this thing called wind training and decided to check it out. And basically, you bring your own bicycle into a class with this device called a wind trainer. And you clamp the back wheel of your bike in this wind trainer. It has a flywheel with resistance. And so you add the resistance on. And it has the same feel as riding outdoors. Now, the nice thing about this is it's not like a spin class in terms of you don't know basically how fast you're riding, you don't know what kind of RPMs you're doing. You really are sitting on a bike that you're not going to be riding outside. And so while a spin class is useful and can certainly get you into shape, riding your own bike has some extreme advantages to a spin class. And those of us in winter climates definitely have to find a way to cycle on the off seasons if we want to maintain our fitness level.
Exactly. And from what I understand, the particular person teaching it was quite the athlete anyway.
He is an amazing athlete. He is a 7-time Ironman finisher in Hawaii. He has come back from 2 open heart surgeries, and he's trying to go for Ironman again. When you have Coach Jay as your coach, it is really like having a drill sergeant in your face. Challenging you to do better. And I really stunk at first. I didn't know what I was doing, and I was pedaling around slowly, and he yelled at me, "You're not a little girl riding in the neighborhood. Go faster." And I was very intimidated. But I hung in there, and by the end of the summer when he saw me riding, he admitted to me, "I didn't think you had much hope when you first started, but I'm really surprised how good of a cyclist you are."
Pretty impressive. So do you find that being in the corporate world helped with you just having that tenacity to move up the ladder?
Perhaps being in the corporate world. And I also think I have done a lot of running in my life. I'm definitely not a great runner. I can compete in my category, you know, for the T-shirt races in town. But that, having suffered through doing a half marathon many times, just allowed me to have that fortitude to continue on, even though I maybe had pain or had some doubts. I just would plunge on anyway.
And Nancy, I really understand what you said about starting later in life and then really having to go the pace to really get up to speed with everybody, because with me, I didn't start rowing until I was 40 years old, and I stayed at a recreational pace for a couple years before I transitioned over to competitive racing, and I would look at the workouts for the day and like, oh my God, they expect me to do that? And so at the beginning it was very intimidating, but you just show up because you have a bigger purpose and a desire to really see how far you can push yourself. Is that part of what you found for yourself too?
I think it was pushing myself, and it was also just enjoying the cycling so much. I had wanted to potentially do, well, it's a triathlon, but it's a different one. It has a rowing component. So I was going to run 9 miles and bike, I think it's about 45 miles, and then row. So that was one of my goals I had. I had an injury and wasn't able to run, but I did do 2 legs of that race. And so that was part of my inspiration, is just, you know, I just need to get in shape and just do something different and pursue something on my own that has nothing to do with anyone else and has nothing to do with work. doesn't revolve around my daughter, doesn't revolve around any intellectual pursuit. It just is me expressing myself through movement, and I love that.
And congratulations for doing that, because I know a lot of people who have the excuses of, oh, I don't have the time, and they just can't take, you know, they put everybody else's needs before their own. So really sounds like a healthy stance, and I know one of the things that happened for me with the rowing is that it kind of like became my therapy. You know, it's my form of meditation.
I can totally relate to that. And I would also say, though, that I do understand when people are busy, especially if you
mm-hmm.
have young children at home.
Sure.
It just still is important to make time for yourself. And mm-hmm. sometimes that time might be a half hour at your lunch hour. And sometimes, you know, you might be able to take a few hours on Saturday. I just think it's so important to find activities that you enjoy and that can lift your mood and your spirit. It's just such a wonderful retreat from life, as you said.
Yeah, really, really important. Because when you take care of yourself, you're in a better position to take care of everybody else in your life.
Absolutely.
And one of the things that you were mentioning is that you did do some running, and I'm sure that you did some lifting weights, but when you get into cycling, you're using different muscles. So what did you have to really go through in order to get into cycling shape?
The indoor wind training class,
mm-hmm.
I am so grateful I took that, because what you do in the wind training class is you acclimate your muscles to the different movements. And so we would do different drills. We would do like one-legged drills, pedaling one leg to get our
mm-hmm.
form perfect. Cycling is a lot about form, which I'm sure rowing is as well.
Mm-hmm.
Some sports rely a lot more on form than others, and cycling is one of those sports. So by learning the proper form, and also it's like a neurological learning that you have to do. Your body has to get accustomed to firing the right way to be able to move your muscles and to have everything timed properly. So doing that indoor training class and not learning a lot of bad habits helped me immensely.
That sounds really powerful. What a great way to get started.
Absolutely.
And so once you were able to go outdoors, you were saying that you were cycling with men, and there were times that they would kind of leave you behind because they were just more experienced and stronger and faster. So what did you do to really conquer that? Because one of the things I've seen for myself as a rower is that I'm not your typical rower because I'm a lot smaller and not as heavy as some of them. So I had to really work on my technique to make up for the strength. And therefore, I'm just wondering what you did to really compensate for those limitations you had.
I will tell you that the most important thing for me was to just push myself as hard as I could to stay with them. And sometimes I'd stay with them just for a brief amount of time, and I'd get dropped back. And other times I'd stay with them longer. And eventually I was able to hang with them and even sometimes take a pull, you know, of the cycling group. I think for me it just was pushing myself and having that persistence and perseverance to want to improve. There's something about seeing people ahead of me. You know, if I'm going by myself and I'm just riding my bike, I might not be that challenged to push myself to that
mm-hmm.
limit. But when I have people in a group and I'm getting dropped, I just get very competitive, and not necessarily against them, just competitive
right.
with myself to try to hang on.
Mm-hmm. And then I would think that as you were preparing for your Tour de France, going through that you probably were training in the mountains and varying types of terrain. How much would you cycle during a given day and, or possibly even a given week to get ready for that?
Well, one of the things that I did and I would recommend to people is to cycle the distance that you'll cycle in a week on your own at home. So if you're cycling, you know, a couple hundred miles in a week on a tour, just make sure you can do that at home. I couldn't cycle 80 miles every day, let's say, but what I would do is do longer rides on the weekend. So on the weekend, I might do anywhere from 60, 80, occasionally 100. That
mm-hmm.
wasn't common, but occasionally 100. And then a couple of nights a week, I do, again, longer rides, 45, 50 miles. In between, if I didn't have a lot of time on a night, I would at least ride my bike to and from work. And towards the end, I was riding every day because I wanted to make sure I was comfortable riding my bike every day, even after a hard day.
Mm-hmm.
So that was really important for me, is just to have that consistent time on the saddle.
And I would really love to hear a little bit more about your Tour de France and the climbs or the most interesting points or challenges.
Yeah, you know, part of the challenge of doing a tour is just being on your bike every day. You know, being on your bike every day for a couple of weeks is a challenge to a body.
Mm-hmm.
Some days I would push myself very hard, and the next day I would feel fatigued, and yet I still have to get on the bike. I also had challenges with just not having my butt butter with me and having some rash and having some challenges in my bottom area, which can be kind of painful.
Mm-hmm.
So there were just challenges of doing the activity every day. The mountain climbs I did, there were many smaller mountains, but the two major ones are actually sometimes stages on the Tour de France, which is Mount Ventoux and Alpe d'Huez. And Mount Ventoux is a famed climb mainly because Lance Armstrong would always conquer people on that climb.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of times towards the end of the Tour de France. And there's one I remember, I don't remember what year it is, and he was right with somebody, and then he turned his head, looked at them, and with sort of that gleam in his eye, and surged up the mountain. How he did that after having ridden that mountain, I can't tell you, because it was the hardest climb I've ever done in my life.
Hmm.
It was 14 miles, 9-10% gradient most of the way.
And one of the things that I work with my clients about when they're on a challenging leg during a race is to do, like, mini goals or mini miles. So were there some things that you did for yourself to just kind of keep you going and in the pack?
You know, and by this time, everybody, of course, rode up the mountain on their own. So it wasn't like I was with a group of people. But one of the things I did is I really wanted to stop as soon as I hit that intense climb. I thought, my goodness, I just can't make this up. And there were flies circling my head, and it was an incredibly hot day. And so what I decided to do is just to give myself permission to stop every mile or two if I needed. So I just had that as sort of my framework. And then what I found, though, is as I continued to go, my legs became accustomed to the grueling pressure of climbing the mountain. So it was definitely a mental battle as well as a physical battle. My body acclimated, it seemed, and then my mind let go of the struggle.
Isn't that amazing how that happens?
It totally is amazing, because I never would have thought that when I first started that climb.
And that once you get out of the struggle, everything changes.
So true.
Yeah. And how many miles were you riding a day during the tour?
It was average, probably about 55 miles a day. Some
mm-hmm.
days were shorter, maybe 30 or 40, and some days were over 80.
And then how many days was your tour?
It was, I think, 14 days of riding, 15 days total.
Well, congratulations for really taking on something like that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah.
It was almost 800 miles by the time we were done.
So did you meet a lot of men along the trip?
You know, I met some interesting men. It wouldn't be like a dating situation,
right.
Man, but I did meet a burly bartender in Bordeaux who was drinking rum and pouring me wine, and and a man who had an olive museum. He was in his 80s, he must have been, and he was trying to set me up with a Dutchman. And
an olive museum, you said?
Yeah, an olive museum.
How interesting.
Yeah, Neon France.
And so I just love to hear stories. I know that your book goes along the lines of Eat, Pray, Love. What is one particular story or anecdote that you have in the book that you might be able to share with us? Just a little tease.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about France is just how friendly the people are. And I think a lot of times people have the perception that maybe the French people don't like Americans. So what I actually found on my first day of riding, I was going very fast and just enjoying a beautiful day, and actually being in France, I was, I don't know, I was going maybe 22, 23 miles an hour, and it was one of those days where everything just seemed perfect, and all of a sudden I heard this clink beside my bike, and I wondered what happened. Did I hit something? So I slammed on my brakes, and I mean slammed, and I should have just eased on my brakes, and my bike started fishtailing. And I knew I was going to fall. And so as I was looking for landing places, the best place I could see was this gravel driveway. And so I slid in the gravel driveway, tore up my arm, tore up my knee, and heard behind me a vehicle. And this woman came out of the car, and she spoke no English. And, you know, it motioned me to follow her inside her house. And so I followed her in her house, and she spent the time bandaging me, cleaning out my wound, giving me some pills, which I assume were painkillers. And it was just an amazing thing for being in a foreign country, not speaking the language with her. Her name was, well, she said it, Ahoha, which I figured was, eventually, was Aurora.
Oh, okay.
So she was like my beautiful constellation, my beautiful star that helped me out when I needed help. And that sets the tone for a lot of my experiences with the French people.
Sounds like you had an angel there.
Absolutely.
And so was there any other strategy that you used to really get in shape to ride up those mountains, especially those two most challenging ones? Because I would think that in Montana you have mountains, but you don't have ones really with that particular grade.
I think it's very challenging to find a road with that grade in the U.S., because most of the times, you know, we'll do switchbacks if you have that kind of climb. A lot of these roads are very, very old, and I'm sure this one was a very ancient road that they just ended up paving. So I went up Beartooth Pass, which is on the way to Yellowstone Park, which is pretty steep. It's maybe a 5, 6% gradient, and I thought that was challenging. I had no idea how challenging Mount Ventoux would be, but we actually have a race up Beartooth. I'd ridden it maybe a few times that summer, and then I did a race a couple of weeks before I went to France, and I didn't do very well in the race because I had been riding so much and my legs were tired on the day I rode up that mountain. But just being able to go as fast as I could and to push myself helped a lot when I was faced with those challenges in France.
And therefore, what would you say recommending to others that might think about doing something like this? Because it sounds like a very romantic thing to do, actually.
Well, I would say, first of all, just know what your goal is with a cycling tour. Everybody doesn't want to push themselves to the extreme, and there were certainly more challenging tours that I could do where I was riding maybe 80, 90 miles in mountains every day. Mm-hmm. But to me, I didn't want to have it be so grueling that I couldn't enjoy the country. So I think just knowing what your goals are. Some people like to have the bikes with baskets and maybe go 10, 15 miles a day and get their bread in the market, and that's their day of cycling, which is totally fine. So I think the most important thing is know what your goal is. I think the second thing is just make sure that you've had at least 6 months under your belt of cycling. It's great if you have an option to do an indoor class with a pro like I had.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have that, and if you don't have a wind trainer, certainly spin classes will get you into shape. And, you know, the other thing on the tour is it's not a race, and so sometimes it doesn't matter how fast you go. You just don't want to be so uncomfortable that you don't enjoy yourself on the tour.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say those things. If you are climbing mountains, by all means, practice
sure.
climbing. You know, I had a coach once tell me that the three most important things you can do with cycling, you really don't need to do more than 3 days a week. One day ride long, one day ride fast, and one day do climbs.
Mm-hmm. And what I have seen with most sports is that there usually is some type of rest or recovery period as opposed to going 14 days straight. So what did you do to really keep your body from getting too exhausted during that time?
I had to learn how to taper off some days.
Mm-hmm.
So I ended up with my knee being really sore because I had pushed very hard on one of the early days. And so I just had to back myself off, even though there's some days when you have that tailwind and the road is flat and, oh, I just wanted to push so hard, but I had to learn how to back off and just enjoy the beauty and enjoy the scenery around me.
So really it's about knowing your own limits.
Knowing your own limits and realizing that every day you don't have to push yourself. And as much fun as it was to get into shape by pushing myself to catch up to all of those other cyclists, mm-hmm. I had to almost learn the opposite in France, that it's okay to dawdle a little bit, to get off my bike and take pictures, to enjoy a leisurely lunch. So there is that balance that I had to learn as an athlete.
And was this something you did by yourself, or did you do it with a group of people, Nancy?
I went by myself from the U.S. I did meet some people who organized the tour.
Right.
They were from Australia and England, and we camped along the way as well. So it was not a cushy tour by any means.
No. And I've seen similar things also.
Uh-huh.
Then would you say that the goal was everybody met at the camp each night, even though they might be going at their own paces?
Absolutely. We'd have a map of where we were going. And basically, we were on our own. A lot of the tour members stuck together and rode with either, a few people, or if they were couples, they rode together. Most of the time, I opted to go off by myself. First of all, the pace started off a little slow for me. But then what I discovered is that I really enjoyed meeting the French people, and I wanted to have an experience of being in France versus hanging out with English-speaking people.
That's great. So if someone's just getting started in road biking, any particular gear that you recommend? Because I know that everything's an investment.
It absolutely is. And one of the main things I would say is buy the best road bike you can afford. Chances are you're not going to find a good road bike for under $700.
Mm-hmm.
And I think investing in the right equipment is so important. I started off with a pretty good road bike, and it was probably about a $1,000 road bike, and I upgraded to one that's carbon fiber. And the main difference with that is it just provides a lot more comfort on your ride, especially if you're doing a lot of riding in a day or in a week. So I would say invest in the best equipment you can. Get advice from people at bike shops. They tend to be very avid cyclists, I've always found, in bike shops. They'll tell you what the best shoes are. They'll suggest what you should fuel with. Sometimes you can, get great ideas for, do you need to have some kind of endurance drink or some kind of bars, and you can try things out at a cycling shop. And a lot of times you can even take bikes for a test ride. So that would be another thing I would suggest, is to do your best to make sure that you have a bike that feels comfortable for you as well.
And I've seen some people that do customized bikes where they get the higher-end frame, and then they can upgrade the other parts of the bike as they, on an ongoing basis. Have you seen that as well?
Mm-hmm. I have seen that as well. I was just talking to somebody I know who had done that same thing today.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting because you get the really high-quality frame, but it's not quite the expense as if you got everything at the Rolls-Royce level. So you can just go ahead and then change your tires out and upgrade pieces of it at a time, and it makes it a lot more cost-effective for people. And then over the period of time, you have this really amazing bike.
Sure, yeah, absolutely. And I think, the components are expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And biking is not a real frugal hobby to have, as I found out. And, the other thing I would really encourage people is to make sure that they invest in cycling clothes. I started off in my indoor cycling class just with, I think I had a cheap pair of cycling shorts and just an old T-shirt. Well, the thing about cycling is I get very sweaty, and I think a lot of people do. And if you have the clothes that don't wick away the sweat, with running, you can get away with it. But in cycling, you can't, because you'll get very cold or you'll get overheated. And so also investing in clothes is a very good idea, and cycling shorts so you don't have the sore bottom problem.
Yeah, having that little extra padding always helps. So.
Absolutely.
Nancy, you made some really great points today. Really wonderful. I just enjoyed everything that you had to say because I can get your sense of fun and adventure that came with this whole thing, and that you really had to reframe some things as to what you expected it to be and change it to how it really suited you, because sometimes your expectations don't always feel suit the reality of things. And that I just want to thank you for being here and talking about how you were able to push yourself both physically as well as psychologically. Your website is nancybrook.com. And if the listeners want to be able to talk further with you, what's the best way for them to connect?
You know, probably the best way is just by sending me an email, nancy@nancybrook.com, and be happy to share any information you'd like about cycling in France or just getting started in cycling.
And once again, she does have her book out. It's Cycling, Wine, and Men, A Midwife Tour de France. I suggest you check it out. It sounds like it is an amazing read. I know I've seen little excerpts. And once again, do you have what it takes to be a winning athlete but realize something is lacking during competitions? It could be losing focus and confidence the moments before your event begins, thinking about previous times when you didn't perform your best, or concerns about the competition. Whatever it is, you know it's a distractor for the event itself and affecting your focus. You might try to tough it out, but the results usually just don't last. Clearing the distractions affecting your focus and confidence is easier than you think. Together, we can implement a strategy for winning results, and contact me for a free discovery session at info@inagameforwinningathletes.com. And Nancy, I want to thank you for joining me today. It's been great.
Well, thank you so much, Lauren. I've had a fun time.
Oh, me too. And really great to just hear the story right from you. It's always interesting to get the story from the person because sometimes it has a little different spin on it than what you read in the book. So thank you for that. And I just want to thank everybody for joining us today. This is Lauren Fogelman, In a Game for WinningAthletes.com and Mindset for Winning Athletes. Take care. Until next time. Bye.